first night had been easy, as if the concept of night still had any meaning. No more questions, no more interrogations, no more appearances before Talion's politicians. For all of Balor's sense of confinement, there was freedom in leaving Krogron. In all likelihood, he would never again see its sun or walk its soil. They believe they have exiled me, he thought. They have not jailed me, they've released me. This is not an ending, but a beginning. I am not here through my own actions, I am betrayed by friends. He had come to know the paintings with the familiarity of his own skin. He could lose himself for hours in the simple portrayals of consciousness's ghosts created by his mother, and spent much of his time on Krogron studying. The sensation of terror, he wondered. Our nature selected it as a trait for a reason. It is the purest of emotions. When it is false, there is no penalty. When it is true, you can only long for it to become false. He supposed the connection with Perez intrigued him as much as the content of the painting themselves. She was an enigmatic woman, certainly not a mother to him in the sense that Bexon had been father to Talion and Milsa. She had been the ultimate teacher. He could no longer remember many of her lessons, but had little doubt that they had taken hold of him. The question now, he thought, is given my mother's wishes, have I succeeded or failed? The established order has been overthrown on Krogron twice. The second time, I was the established order. In the end, Milsa had always held the seeds of his destruction, and she had certainly fooled him well enough, acting the role of empty shell with profound skill. What defined her hatred for me? Did curing her illness take away something she needed? Talion's disloyalty I can at least understand. If he was not motivated by a desire for power of his own, vengeance for his sister's death might motivate anyone to action. But Milsa was something else entirely. The very day of her final cure, she couldn't wait to be away from me. Much like Perez, they have great power in their leaving, the women in my life. Had the rebels been banished from Krogron, what might have been possible? A world of busy, motivated people, all following the natural state of dominance from above. So few scholars had ever understood the true ramification of their own studies of the mind. Talion and Milsa were perfect proof of one theory, that to allow the family to exert dominance over its members, a culture within a culture was created, and to some degree, the two of them had belonged to Bexon more than they had to the greater community. Most of us without ties to our families were more pliable. There was a mistake in my thinking. I never attempted to be a father to the two of them, the ultimate father. Perhaps things might have been different. Terror did motivate people, and even motivated Talion and Milsa. Taylor had offered a choice with his entertainment, a choice of what alternatives Balor himself did not entirely understand. There was great power in the theater of words that Taylor had unleashed, and Balor was still not certain if Talion had played a hand in its creation or not. There would be no knowing the answer to that question. There would be no terror for him in this shell of rock. There was a certain irony to it. He had brought out the purest emotions in his people, and if he was denied anything, it was emotion itself. They'd hoped to create some sense of shame in him, he supposed. If there was shame in his mind, it was only for not having fought harder or smarter. Time passed. After a thousand nights, dwelling on the past was losing its interest. He tried to remember his earliest memories and watched his life pass from event to event, from feeling to feeling, but even this grew tiresome. It was difficult to keep a normal sleeping pattern. There was nearly constant desire to sleep, but on waking he'd grown to dread the emptiness. The well of sleep was empty, and he would need to pass time awake in order for it to fill once more. In time he'd learned to test his body. He developed his own physique, learning to stand on one hand and to see how long he could hold himself upright. Scant seconds turned to minutes with the passing days, then to hours, and soon he developed the inner balance where he could sleep with his body propped onto one hand. Satisfied that he'd reached a plateau, he developed the identical strength in his other arm and hand. Letting his muscles atrophy, he would then begin the regimen anew. Milsa had possessed special skills. Something in him felt compelled to determine how they worked, and eventually he could feel some of the control she had always described. In the vicinity of 5,000 nights, a new challenge had arisen. Could he die if that is what he wanted? Strangulation was the only means available to him. He imagined an elaborate noose he might construct from his own clothing. He knew his own physiology would ultimately defeat him. Oxygen was a fuel, but only one fuel his body required. Shutting off the other was not possible. The noose had never made it past his own imaginings. There are three outcomes of this predicament, he came to understand. This rock may find the heart of a sun. In that case, I'll likely not survive. Even my body cannot withstand the heat of the sun. Second possibility is that I'll be here in my current state for all eternity. If that's the case, I'm doing all I need to do. A third, however unlikely, possibility is that I will be found someday. Some being in the cosmos will open the door. My people did something to the door. Perhaps it was just the construction of a simple warning, or perhaps it was something more complex. I cannot know the answer. But if someone should open that door, and I leave this rock, then I'll need to start my life anew. What will I say? It depends on them, I suppose, he'd thought. If they are primitives, then the answer is clear. If they are more advanced than myself, then perhaps I will learn from them. I will hope for the latter, which requires no preparation. If it is the former, however, the primitives, then for this situation I should prepare. I don't choose to allow my fate to be decided by others. This probably wasn't right, but it didn't quite have the feeling of a hallucination. The rock walls were the right color, the usual texture, all except for the figure sitting on an outcropping of rock, the figure more than slightly engulfed in flame. It wasn't the violent flame consuming its center as fuel, instead something approaching an aura. He wondered if he might put out his hand and push some of the fire away, but who intentionally puts his hand in fire? You are awake. I have some doubts about that, Balor said. More than a few. He focused his eyes a moment. Shame about the fire. Must make bathing a challenge. The figure stood, trailing an orange haze of flame in its wake. It moved slowly, gracefully, dreamlike. These paintings, the figure said, waving a hand past the paintings in his chamber. What do they say to you? Balor rose to a sitting position. You know very well what they say to me. The same things they said to you, mother. The figure of Perez looked at him. This aloneness, does it prey on you? Obviously it preys on me if I must resort to speaking with phantoms, Balor said. I suppose I should be appreciative of the company. He allowed a look of distaste to take control of his features. But I suppose I am not. You and I did not walk long together. On the contrary, I suspect you've been with me every day. One doesn't soon forget a final performance like yours. We might say it is burned into my memory. Humor? If it's humorous, that is probably accidental, he said. I've never had much skill with the subtlety required for wordplay. But please, say what you would say so that we might get this conversation to its conclusion. Because I am keeping you from something, is that it? The figure of his mother said. Because you are not welcome, Balor said. Because I am your mother? Because you aren't real. If I am not real, then isn't the fault yours for manifesting me? Interesting. I found my situation unpleasant before you appeared. Thank you for giving me a newfound appreciation for what I had before. Something in him shuddered, remembering similar words from another mouth. Your current predicament, the figure of his mother said, your isolation. Would this be the cause of your arrogance or the result of it? My isolation, Balor said. He considered for a moment, to apply a possessive pronoun on it as if it were tangible. But perhaps it is. It was something he had always been able to touch, as solid as any wall. My isolation, he repeated. Kova, her name was, or at least it was something like that. Her hair, he remembered, flowed in long waves down her back, a silvery color, but not the silvery shades of age. Her equally light-colored eyes had appealed to him, he remembered. He suspected she was attracted to his power, but then he often had trouble understanding these things. His passions ran hot and strong, but his understanding of them ran shallow and cool. She sat in the window frame, a bit of a sheet over her legs and nothing more. The bright morning sky behind her, her hair only slightly disheveled from their lovemaking. She turned, hearing him stir on the bed. "It is a day of clear skies and beautiful light," she said. I'm sorry if I pry. But does a beautiful day touch anything inside of you? It did, he said, long ago. Not as much now. I am sorry, she said. That is a sad thing. I could not reach you last night, could I? He frowned. I don't understand. Did it seem that I was not pleased by the experience? Kova wrapped the sheet around the rest of her and moved to sit on the bed. She smiled as if trying to express her patience with him. This is the physical Balor, and there is the spiritual. Joy does not live in the body, it is contained by it. I don't believe in spirits, Balor said. You know what I mean, she said. She ran a finger along his leg. We are no closer than we were, I think is my point. We are no more tightly bound. She patted his leg. I see that, and it makes me a little sad. I'm sorry I disappointed you, he said. No, she said. I'm sorry I disappointed you. But you didn't, he said. You were... I enjoyed it. Kova wrapped the sheet tightly around herself as if trying to shield her body from rain or some other external force, clearly feeling vulnerable to something, of what he wasn't sure. Your intelligence runs so deeply, she said, looking at his eyes with an intensity he found uncomfortable to maintain. And some part of you understands benevolence, for you work so hard to do so much for so many. But I feel the separateness of you. She squeezed his hand. What does this make you feel? You are touching my hand, he said. I feel your hand touching my hand. Your skin on my skin. But what does it make you feel? I'm not sure I want to continue this conversation, he said. Balor, Kova asked. I suspect no one ever speaks to you this way, which is sad. You deserve better than this. You wanted to spend time together, he said, maintaining a moment's eye contact, and we have. That does not entitle you to more. I do not feel entitled, Balor, she said, moving her body closer to his. I feel you are entitled to connect to the rest of us. We owe you so much, and yet there is no reward for you? You cannot feel joy? You know nothing of what I feel, he said. She breathed quietly for a few moments, hoping he would say more, then sighed when he said nothing. She nodded finally. I am sorry I could not connect with you on a deeper level. It must be lonely in there, that isolation. The armed guard wore a helmet with a shield that covered his face. Balor's few attempts at conversation had gained him no response. Balor focused on the reflection in the mirror beyond the table. No doubt a mirror with observers behind it. This was clearly an interrogation room of some kind, and I, he observed, am a criminal. The door opened suddenly, and the guard seemed to stiffen slightly. The same bureaucrat who'd been handling all interactions with Balor stepped to the desk. You have a visitor, he said. Any attempt at anything other than sitting there and talking will bring swift reaction from the guard. Do you understand? Balor looked only at his own reflection. Proceed, Balor said. It will pass the time. The bureaucrat returned to the door. After a time, Balor looked at the door, trying his best to show no reaction. His visitor walked to the desk and sat across from him. I must say, Balor said, I would not have expected this. I would never have thought of you as someone who would enjoy another's misfortune. Milsa looked into his eyes for a long time without a word, no real expression on her face. He wondered if perhaps she might just be trying to make him uncomfortable. She was probably succeeding, he realized. You know I suffered greatly as a child, she said finally. And my father, he knew I was suffering, but he also knew I wanted to live. I can't imagine how hard that must have been to respect my decision. Why would you come to me to discuss this? Perhaps to acknowledge something that is true only between us, Balor, Milsa said. You would not be where you are right now if not for what your parents did. She leaned slightly forward. You would also not be where you are right now if not for what my parents did. You're sending this world into a dark age, Balor said. She frowned. Balor, are you looking at me? Or do you see the reflection behind me? Finally, he looked away. You killed my husband, she said. You killed my child. I never met your husband. You didn't have to, she said. Oh, the way you could gather fools, the way a farmer can gather loose strands of grass and bundle them together. Your fools, Balor, your fools. Perhaps they will gather again. No, she said, I don't think so. This storm is over. You know you are the cause of it, he said. I know I was a catalyst for an empty soul that sought any way to possess mine. I know you've had your pains. I know you had little chance to grow in any kind of healthy way, Balor. I understand that. Perhaps there's some part of me that doesn't want to blame you for what you became. But forgiveness, the healing of forgiveness, that will not come easily. I do not seek your forgiveness. You do not understand, Balor. Forgiveness is not something you can request or even take. It must be given. My father taught me much about forgiveness. He also taught me to accept the pain I felt when it was outside of my control. You were outside of my control, right up until the end. But then I had you, didn't I? Are you expecting me to forgive you then? Milsa stood. I hope you'd never forgive me, Balor. There's a peace that comes with forgiveness. You helped save my life, I can't deny that. And then you gutted much of what made my life precious to me, my world, my family. I would certainly rather have died all those years ago if it could have prevented all that you did. You do not have my thanks, you do not have my appreciation. But I will tell you what I do have now. I have my brother. I have my world. I have the knowledge that all the pain I endured made it worth it, so that I could help to stop your madness. Is that all, he said, not even looking at her, or will there be more? I've said what I wanted to say, Milsa said. Walking to the door, she paused. If pain gives meaning to life, Balor, then yours will be a life that I hope will mean the world to all of us. Balor's attention flashed to the present, returning the stare through the slight filter of fire. My current predicament, he said, my isolation. My isolation is nothing new, Mother. I've always been locked inside. Now you can just see my boundaries of stone. He returns to his reclined position. Clever image for a sculptor, revealing what's within the stone, only to find that all that's really been revealed is another external surface. There's always another layer of stone, isn't there? The figure of his mother looked back to the paintings. You're unbowed by your defeat. My defeat, as you call it, resulted in my exile. Only time will tell if my exile is for good or ill, but clearly, staying on Progron would have rivaled any torture I might imagine. And if you could do it all again, he looked at her. And if you could do it all again, you played a hand in all that happened. We all witnessed tragedy. Not all of us seek to create more as a result. I think that's exactly what you had in mind, he said. I've studied your influences, Morian and the others. You sought the means to undermine the very heart of our culture, and I delivered the mechanism to make it happen. The age of the Azir and the Azariah is over. By your hand, not mine. But are you pleased by this outcome? They're fools either way, Balor said. Why should I care? I am not their problem anymore, nor are they mine. I am not pleased and I am not proud, but I know I changed a world. How many can say that? There's not a life on program that hasn't felt my touch and will continue to feel my touch. The killer of death, they called me. Although that capacity now seems to elude me, as I seem incapable of even silencing the dead. Surely some part of this is unresolved in you, Balor, or it would not vex you still. He sat up sharply. I know I was right. I know that given time, they would have grown accustomed to a better life, a purer life. It was all that was primitive in them, their petty lusts and their natural instinct toward growing fat and lazy. They needed purpose. I know that better than anyone. I never lived a day without purpose. It's not in my nature. And this is something you feel you cannot change? Why would I? Balor said. She turned and looked at him, and her features took on the nature of her paintings, and something in him couldn't help but recoil as she grew suddenly larger, the fire growing brighter, flashing off the stone walls of the chamber, her eyes becoming huge dark wells that focused on him, and he felt himself growing suddenly small, suddenly helpless. Suddenly, he looked at his hands, so much smaller than hers, and he wondered if his hands might someday grow large and skilled enough to do the magic that she could do. A bowl of murky water beside her, holding a dripping cloth of rough material. Her hand splashed through the water before going back to the clay, contouring a shape that looked vaguely like someone screaming silently. And he watched with admiration as her fingers left trails of detail behind, giving shape to what had once been nothing. She grew so absorbed in her work, it felt as if she had left the room, leaving behind some swirling mass of white-robed energy that danced with the clay. She was good, even at his young age, he could tell. He approached her slowly, his eyes darting between the clay figure and the figure of his mother. Both figures have the mass of a person in the room, neither one quite animated. Balor reached a small hand to touch his mother's hand. She jerked her hand away. Balor knew he wasn't wanted here. She didn't want him here. Her clay sculpture, she held her hand to the clay. There was the union she sought. He stepped back. He stepped back again. She paid no attention to the shrinking boy behind her. Balor was sure his eyes were still open when she disappeared. There was no sign of her visit, not a footprint, not even a scent of smoke in the air. Only the paintings. Oddly, the space felt emptier than it had before. "And don't come back," Balor said. "Not unless it's to apologize." He could remember her eyes, the cold in her eyes. Seeing him only as a thing to be shaped, shaped for purpose. Even engulfed in flame, there was cold in her eyes. He sat frozen and silent. He did not move, for there was nowhere to move. A day passed, a night passed, another night passed. At 100,000 nights, he imagined he'd imagined everything he could imagine, revisited every major event in his life a few hundred times, kissed every lover more in his mind than he could ever have hoped to do in the flesh, and watched his mother die so many times he could almost feel the fire's heat on his face. He weighed every decision he'd ever made against a series of alternate choices, and all but lived the lives he hadn't lived through the basic randomness of luck. At 200,000 nights, he'd gone beyond thought. The processes for thought had broken down and merged with emotion, reduced to some kind of super instinct. He'd all but programmed his reactions to any number of circumstances he might face. At 300,000 nights, all that remained was drive. Now he could only wait. A night, 100 of them, 1,000, many thousands, an eternity. Thank you.